and political leader Dr. Mustafa Bargoti. Also, a selection from the best of recent broadcasts from the Electronic Intifada with Nora Barrows-Friedman. And at 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman speaks with writer Valeria Luiselli about her new novel, The Story of My Teeth, a witty, exhilarating romp through the industrial suburbs of Mexico City and Luiselli's own literary influences. But first, we've got Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary coming right up on KBOO. Hey, thanks KBOO members for your generous support. If you are not a current member, why not take advantage of our current matching grant for new members and members who are adding to their membership? Just go to kboo.fm/give to find out more.
I'm David Barsamyan, host of Alternative Radio, heard every Tuesday morning at 9 on KBOO. KBOO currently has a one-to-one match for all new and increasing members. If you become a member at this time or increase your donation over last year, your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $10,000 by a group of generous donors and foundations. Consider becoming a monthly sustaining member. This can be set up easily and securely online. Go to kboo.fm/support to get your donation matched today.
Today is Thursday, November 19th, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. We're going to have two wonderful guests today. Bo Grocup is going to be joining us today. He's the author of several books on terrorism, including The Newest Explosions of Terrorism and most recently Strategic Terror, The Politics and Ethics of Aerial Bombardment. We'll be speaking with him coming right up, and then we are welcoming Amanda Fitt with the Government Accountability Project. Amanda is part of the Food Integrity Campaign Director, and she is joining us today because, as many already know, we have just been told that it's perfectly okay. We're going to now have genetically modified, wait for it, salmon. That's right. With the runs in California hitting record lows, with the next season projected to be beyond disastrous and possibly fatal for salmon because of warming waters and the greed of agribusiness, it's looking like we may have no more wild salmon. So now here they come along announcing that we're about to be faced with the prospect of genetically modified fish. And most people, Most people won't know about that. Why? Because while this is being announced, more developments out of Europe with regard to ISIS and terror and those sexy topics that mainstream media just sucks up. And we have other stories here. We've got a few more headlines. The Eugene Water and Electric Board made a mistake when it signed a long-term contract to buy power from the Seneca wood-burning electricity plant. Yeah, they finally realized maybe burning wood. We get messages all every year from time to time. Please, if you have a wood stove, don't use it, even though it's bloody cold outside, because the smoke is very bad for you. So instead, we've got now huge corporate interest, Seneca, which does in fact burn wood, and they say it's waste on the forest floor, otherwise known as the beginnings of a new forest, new trees. So that I guess the Eugene Water and Electricity Board came to their senses again a day late, a dollar short, just as we did when with regard to genetically modified salmon. Well, all this is going on right before holiday season hits, and with the news filled with the next best horror story coming from the terrorism front, we are faced with genetically modified salmon. There you go. And that said, I want to bring Bo on. Good morning, Bo. Thank you so much for joining us today. You've written extensively on terrorism, and you've done an enormous amount of investigative reporting on the subject. Thanks for being with us today.
You're very welcome, Chris. Very welcome.
Well, I see in a press release that you make two points, which are two points that have actually come up from time to time here, but not so concisely and so succinctly. Who's funding ISIS? Of course, we always want to follow the money, you know, because it takes money to launch attacks on this scale, and regime change. The U.S. has an extremely poor track record when it comes to regime change. Almost without exception, we'll see that there's a dictatorship. It's a dictatorship, albeit a secular one, as in the case with Muammar Gaddafi and, of course, with Bashar al-Assad, where the United States comes riding in, guns a-blazing, and decides that they're going to bring democracy to people in that region. What we end up with is violent jihadist fundamentalist, very, very restrictive. Women have no more rights at all. Maybe Muammar Gaddafi was a bad guy. Maybe Assad's a bad guy. But for God's sakes, at least women could own businesses and walk around outside. Anyway, that said, could you talk about the funding of ISIS, Saudis, and some of the other Sunni Gulf states?
You know, it's not a mystery at all. If you do just a little research, you can see that again the Sunni states of the Gulf, including of course Saudi Arabia, but in particular Qatar, are both privately and publicly funding the jihadist groups, the Wahhabi groups, of which, of course, President Bush has, I guess what he meant when he said mission accomplished, he accomplished the Wahhabiness of the Wahhabism of the Sunni Iraqis. And so this is no mystery. Mr. Putin just submitted a document to, the leaders of the West that said, 40 nations are funding ISIS. So I'm sure it wasn't a surprise to them. But the point being that it obviously complicates the story that we have been encouraged to adopt, which is, it's a black and white world, good versus evil. And in particular, the strategy has been of the United States to always follow the money of the terrorists. And of course, when they do it this time, it's very embarrassing.
Well, what about, then if We hear reports that oil, that they bombed a bunch of tanker trucks carrying oil, which sounds to me like a scene out of Mad Max movies. But they're bombing these oil tankers. Apparently, the story goes that they're funding these activities by stealing oil and then selling it on the black market. But everybody does know that obviously it's Saudi money, and. Why not just cut off the funding at the source? Is there what would stop the International Monetary Fund? This is probably a very naive question, but if that funding from coming that comes from Saudi Arabia were stopped, what kind of a world would we be looking at then? What's the scenario?
Well, the Saudis are very important to us, not just because of the oil, but they pay. We pay them for the oil in dollars. And this goes back to a realization that why did Gaddafi have to go? Why did Saddam Hussein have to go? The principal crime that they committed was not that they tortured people, because they, you know, both of them, as recently as 2004, Gaddafi was torturing people. Gluing up the penises of the men that we sent them, and the British intelligence sent them. So it wasn't that they were torturing people. It was that they had challenged the preeminent position, the privileged position of the U.S. dollar, which the whole international economic system is based on. And if we were to lose that, meaning challenged it by saying, let's move to another currency. Saddam Hussein did that relative to the euro, and Gaddafi had the audacity to suggest to the African nations, let's create a whole new currency and use that rather than the dollar. So Saudi Arabia is very important, not just in terms of the resource, but the fact that, you know, they pay what are called petrodollars, and that helps keep a U.S. economy afloat, if not healthy.
It seems that the U.S. has got itself in an unwinnable situation, no matter which way they turn. Again, riding in to a region where they know very little, guns are blazing, and expecting that this is going to be no problem, just like overturn one regime and instead give people democracy. And people don't want democracy at gunpoint. I digress. So regime change, can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Regime change is the basic mantra of what are called the neoconservatives. There has been a power struggle within the American national security state since the late 70s between these two competing groups, one which is called the trilateralists, who want to use the existing institutions like the United Nations, want to use diplomacy first and probably foremost, and want to use all the instruments of U.S. foreign policy before they commit young men and women, you know, to war. The other, and dominant ever since the Bush W administration, is what we call neoconservatives, who epitomized by people like Rumsfeld and Cheney, Wolfowitz, who came to power, of course, and really crystallized this power struggle with the W administration. Well, their preferred instrument of foreign policy is the military. Use it first and foremost. Use it unilaterally. If you want to get alliances, build ad hoc alliances like the Coalition of the Willing, etc. And these are the people who even George Herbert Walker Bush called the crazies. But they came to power, and their idea was that there are five states, five nations in the Middle East, that if we could change their leadership, regime change, that would be good for our foreign policy and our economic and political interests. So they, you know, that was their plan. They wrote a letter to Clinton in 2008, encouraging him to get rid of Saddam Hussein. So when Bush came to power, that was on the agenda. It's not that they mind dictators. The United States has never minded
never.
Dictators. It's just that it has to be dictators that are our dictators. So both Gaddafi, Saddam Hussein were showing signs, in particular committing that great crime of challenging the dollar. So they had to go. And, of course, we've seen the chaos. But is the preferred use of military power first, use it unilaterally, and put in dictators who will serve our interests. And that's what regime change is.
Well, thank you. This is a subject that is a great deal more complex than we've had time to get into in these short minutes. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And I do commend our listeners' attention to these books. It's definitely a good way to begin to understand what is actually going on in the region, the politics and ethics of aerial bombardment, and of course the newest explosions of terrorism. And we can try and post that on the KBOO website. Bo, thank you so much for joining us today. We have no more time left. We do have standing by right now Amanda with the Government Accountability Project. We're going to have to, Amanda Hitt, with the Food Integrity Campaign Director at the Government Accountability Project. I'm going to have to invite Amanda back at another time. We are out of time for today. But food safety should be on everyone's radar all the time. Because look what happens, you turn your back and you end up with genetically modified salmon at a time when wild salmon are under the greatest threat that they have ever faced as far as their habitat change and collapse. This has been Air Cascadia for Thursday, November 19th, 2015. You're listening, KBOO Portland. Engineering for us today is Rock Bergeron. Thanks for that, Rock. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Flashpoints, an encore broadcast of a moving speech by Palestinian medical doctor, human rights